This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 29th of March, 2018. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 29th of March, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And Albie Minns.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. And the main headlines this week: Winchester alive and well, says Civic Chief. Opening date set for Chesil Lodge. And attack over lack of depot details. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which is Winchester, alive and well, says Civic Chief. A Winchester business chief has said that Silver Hill 2 retail plans are right for the city, following criticism at a public meeting last week. Catherine Turnus, executive director of the Winchester Business Improvement District, BID, defended the scheme after residents told councillors they should be supporting existing retail rather than developing more units. One person went so far as to say the City Council was presiding over the death of Winchester at the update meeting over the Silver Hill 2 scheme, officially known as the Central Winchester Regeneration Project. Ms. Turnus said, "The national retail picture does indicate that it is a tough market, but, as the City Council states, the feedback for Central Winchester Regeneration points to a mixed-use development and the BID believes that is the right strategy. I personally disagree with the comment on not providing retail space within the plan, as landlords have the monopoly over charging rents, and this prices many businesses, especially independents, out of the market. More available units will drive competitive rents." However, Ms. Turnus added, "I do agree that existing businesses need assistance in diversifying their model to ensure they survive in this tough climate. We will be shortly releasing a series of blogs which have reviewed practices in a dozen independent businesses. We hope learning from fellow businesses, coupled with the launch of a £50,000 annual fund for independent BID businesses, a new initiative for the BID's third term, will help protect those that currently contribute to Winchesterness." As previously reported, Winchester's finance chief, Guy Ashton, defended the plans to regenerate part of Winchester city centre, arguing that the new retail space would only account for an extra 3 to 4% when research had found demand of 5 to 10%. Councillor Ashton said, "Winchester has a 4% vacancy rate. The national average is 15%. Having an SPD that allows for flexibility is the way forward." On Monday, Councillor Ashton emailed the Chronicle, see letters page 22, to add, "Today I counted 327 shops in central Winchester. A mere 12 were empty. That is 3.7%, consistent with the citywide 4% vacancy rate calculated in 2016. Some churn is inevitable, but 4% is pretty healthy and way below the national average. Some decry the street market and the presence of TK Maxx, Travelodge, Poundland and Primark, but they successfully offer options to the young and less affluent, as well as to those seeking something different or artisanal. As for blaming Winchester City Council for the supposed decline, its proposals for Silver Hill regeneration will only marginally increase retail space in the city. WCC does not control the retail sector's costs. Central government sets business rates and private landlords set rents. Shopping habits are changing. Some towns, stores and chains are failing to adapt, but we should celebrate the dynamism of retailers in Winchester." And there are various pictures, one of Councillor Ashton beaming out there, and the new plans, an architect's drawing for the antique market, Friars Gate Yard, which actually looks rather nice, surprisingly, and an artist's impression of Middlebrook Street, completely paved in area, which again looks good, and Catherine Turnus making her speeches at the meeting.
Opening date set for Chesil Lodge. A date for the opening of Winchester's development has been confirmed following months of delay. the completion date for Chesil Lodge project in Chesil Street has been pushed back several times by Winchester City Council, but it has now been confirmed residents will begin moving in June. As previously reported, the Chesil Street development, which will see 52 flats built for over 55s, had an initial completion date of November last year, but was pushed back to February following delays. But in February, councillors heard from the leader, Councillor Caroline Horrell, that they were still unsure when the major housing project would be completed, following a question by Winchester Liberal Democrat group leader Lucille Thompson. Now the council has confirmed contractor Gallifoyd Toy has sent a notice of completion, meaning that the handover of the building will start in May and in June residents will begin to move in. Richard Botham, the City Council's corporate head of housing, said, "The Chesil Lodge development sets a new standard for older persons' housing, where residents can enjoy their later years in spacious homes, knowing that care and support is on hand when they need it. It also offers beautiful views over the historic city of Winchester. The development would not have been possible without the help and support of our key partners, including Hampshire County Council, Homes England, and particularly the late Harold Harris, an ex-Winchester resident whose generous bequest to support housing for older people in the city has helped fund the development. The City Council said buyers for all the sale and share ownership flats were secured months ago, and rented flats are already oversubscribed with applicants. The homes will provide flats especially designed for independent living, with a range of communal facilities, including a restaurant, laundry, treatment rooms, and lounges. The council says it will be highly energy efficient, with minimal heating costs subsidised by the latest renewable technology." And there are a number of pictures here. One of Chesil Lodge with all its scaffolding around it. And then there's interior pictures, one of the wet room style bathroom, which from the picture looks quite spacious. And there are a couple of pictures of the lounge area, which has a dining table in it. It all looks very glamorous. Actually, it looks quite big. But who knows? Pictures can be deceiving.
Attack over lack of depot details. Councillors are still waiting for answers over the future of the Bar End depot site as plans progress for the city's new £38 million leisure centre. Members of the public got a brief glimpse of how the new Winchester Sports and Leisure Park could look at a meeting of the City Council's Leisure Subcommittee on Monday evening. Councillors Lisa Griffiths, portfolio holder for Health and Wellbeing, and Guy Ashton, portfolio holder for Finance, outlined how the Leisure Centre and its surrounding facilities would interact with the city through a network of cycle routes and paths. They also presented a design framework for the area, which includes the landmark depot site. But some councillors were left asking for more. Councillors Brian Lamming, Malcolm Prince, both Liberal Democrats, and Kim Gottlieb, Conservative, criticised the lack of information about the depot, with Councillor Lamming saying the depot site should have been included in the leisure centre. It's about making sure the leisure centre creates a regeneration of that area. Infrastructure doesn't take into account the depot site. It's really quite mad. Former Labour councillor Patrick Davies, who was at the meeting, added, "As someone who has repeatedly asked the council why it has excluded the depot site from this exercise, I'm annoyed it isn't in the overall site strategy. One of the ideas for the site heard through resident feedback was to create a convenience store." Councillor Lamming said, "I think a convenience store would help residents. There is a company that is interested in buying a bit of the site also. Defending the handling of the scheme, Councillor Ashton said principles for the depot had been set out in the design framework. They included uses that would not generate much traffic and would have a low parking requirement. The convenience store was being taken on board by the council. Councillor Ashton added that there had been no deals yet for the depot's site and that the council had received more than 1,000 responses across 14 consultation events. As previously reported, the council's cabinet last year approved the mix of facility for the proposed centre, which will be based at Bar End and replace the ageing River Park Leisure Centre that dates from 1974. It will include an 8-court sports hall, a 50-metre swimming pool that can be separated into two smaller ones, a learner pool and a water play area. And there's a photograph of council critic Patrick Davis speaking into a microphone, looking up.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, then Christian comment, letters, historical items, Chronicle comment and first person, and Belgarum. And then we'll do the announcements and what's on. So we start with the death announcements this week. Beckley. Tony Beckley died on the 16th of March after a short illness, aged 66. Brinsden. Albert John Brinsden died in Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 15th of March, aged 98. Bud. Alice Budd died peacefully in hospital, aged 85. Carter. John Carter, known as Jack, of Chilton, Polden, Somerset, but formerly of Winchester, who died on the 17th of February, aged 92. Dyke. Edith Marion Dyke died on the 4th of March. Fry. Muriel Fry died on the 19th of March at home in Kingsworthy, aged 96. Gunter, Margaret Gunter, name McMaster, who died on the 1st of March at Flowerdown Nursing Home. Habgood, Florence Habgood, died peacefully on the 20th of March, aged 99. Harris, Geoffrey Daniel Harris, died on the 19th of March, aged 90. Hartley, Noel Hartley, known as Cy, died on the 7th of March, aged 78. London, Pat London, nay Bachelor, died on the 16th of March after a short illness, aged 93. McFarlane, Janet Dorothy McFarlane, died at Nunwood Nursing Home, aged 77. Stannard, Alan Stannard, died in hospital on the 9th of March, aged 89. Watkins, Edward Watkins, died at home on the 17th of March, aged 81. And Wheeler, Mary Wheeler, died peacefully on the 26th of March, aged 79. And now we have a Christian comment read by Albie.
And Christian comment this week is by the Reverend Graham Bokert, Rector of the Upper Itchen Benefice and Area Dean of Ulsford, under the heading The Gobsmacking Puzzle of Easter. April the 1st is Easter Sunday, an unfortunate day for it to fall on, as I wonder how many people will be distracted from Easter as a Christian celebration of something amazing and instead be focusing on finding unsuspecting victims to pinch and punch whilst trying to play tricks on them. Easter Day is an utterly gobsmacking, jaw-dropping and astonishing event that has had a profound effect upon the history and destiny of humankind, and on each and every one of us. Easter is an inherently radical statement of intent, from God to the world, tangible and essential. That said, Easter can seem rather complex. It can be a bit of a puzzle, difficult to understand, and esoteric. For some, sadly, it doesn't mean anything. This is a great shame, because the events bound up in the life of Jesus, his birth, witness and proclamation, one incidentally of love and salvation, which led to his capture in Gethsemane, torture by Pontius Pilate, crucifixion on Calvary, culminating in the most extraordinary thing in all of human history, his resurrection. These are events that are not just life-changing, but eternity-changing too. Does that sound complicated? Well, of course it does. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 14, St. Paul uncharacteristically makes it all rather simple. St. Paul says something to each of us that is easy to understand, easy to comprehend, an uncomplicated truth of Jesus' resurrection. We discover that for all humanity, something wonderful has happened as a consequence of believing that Jesus died and rose again. Even so, through Jesus, God will bring with him those who have died. Now that does seem straightforward, does it not? God, our God, has responded through grace to the reality of sin and death in this world. The simplicity of this statement, that Jesus died and rose again, should not mask the utterly profound reality of what God is doing for each and every one of us each day, every day. God is inviting all humanity through his saving power, an escape from death, an escape made possible through Jesus' resurrection. Jesus, as a sign that evil cannot triumph, and we are invited to join him in that fight. What an invitation. What a bidding hard won. Jesus dying on the cross, initiating a new age of hope and love. It is up to us to accept that invitation. This Easter, let it be all about love, life-changing and life-saving. Let your faith be grounded in the joy and promises of knowing and believing in Jesus Christ as Lord and Saviour. A promise of salvation, of sin broken and death defeated. Jesus shining brightly as the enemy of evil and darkness, so that you might be saved.
Thank you. Now we move on to letters to the editor, Nikki.
And this one from John Stanning, headed, Yes, Flying Rats. Sir, you captioned a photograph of a city pigeon on March 22nd, letters page, a feathery friend or a flying rat. It's worth noting that two species of pigeon live around Winchester. In gardens and the countryside, we see the wood pigeon, Columba palumbus, and hear its characteristic cooing call. But the pigeons in the city are a quite different species. The feral or street pigeon, Columba livia domestica, descended from the wild rock dove via domesticated pigeons. The feral pigeon nests on buildings' ledges, as its ancestors nested on cliffs. Feral pigeons in city centres are simply vermin. Like rats, mice and cockroaches, their droppings carry disease and parasites which can affect humans. Pigeon droppings are also corrosive and cause serious damage to buildings. I don't know of a business in Winchester that actually wants pigeons on its building. On the contrary, Winchester businesses spend a lot of money and effort on anti-pigeon devices like nets and spikes. Feral pigeons may look superficially pretty, to some people, but so may rats and cockroaches to some people. How many of us would call a rat a furry friend or a cockroach a shiny friend? And that from John Stanning, Corns Close, Winchester.
Itchingate. Sir, I'm reading the Hampshire Chronicle and came across the article for renaming the Silver Hill Development, Chronicle, March 22nd. I would like to suggest Itchingate. I have also been reading about the poor state of our roads. Perhaps your paper should run a competition to establish the worst pothole in the country. Naturally, we have a contender near us. We are thinking of erecting a sign stating, "No swimming, no fishing or diving." And that's from N. Armstrong at Overton.
And now a letter from David Selby, West Hill Road North, South Wanston, under the heading "Sort Traffic First." Sir, I support David Farthing on the pathetic transport interchange as part of the station approach project. Chronicle Letters, March 22nd. He refers to the movement strategy consultation document, which I think should be the prime factor in current decision making before the station approach, the central Winchester regeneration, the proposed leisure facilities at Bar End, and, dare I say it, the facile alterations to M3 Junction 9. All these projects will involve an increase in traffic movements, and there should be some joined-up thinking before decisions are made on each of the projects in isolation. Just take the issue of delivery vehicles. Surely these must figure in a movement strategy. Is the City Council serious about promoting public transport? And how will each project contribute to this proposal in an integrated way? Finally, I come to the Junction 9 project, which, as far as I can tell from the documentation and attending one of the consultation events, is an expensive way of speeding container traffic on its way to the Midlands and the North. It will in no way prevent a convoy of 40-ton lorries wending their way through the city when parts of the A34 are blocked, as has happened several times this year so far. The issue of pollution should be integral to all considerations of a movement strategy, which hopefully will also include far, far better facilities for cycling and walking, not just within the city, but for access to the city.
And from James Anderson, South Wanston, again. Headed, "Is British Company Worth Saving?" Sir, one feels for the De La Rue employees in Gateshead and Basingstoke over the loss of the UK passport contract to Gemalto Thales. But then, perhaps the end game beckons for De La Rue. Not so long ago, DLR lost its largest banknote customer, the Indian government. Is the DLR passport factory worth saving? De La Rue has viewed life from a paper banknote perspective. The company, like so many others, rested on its laurels during the good times, only to wake up when it was much too late. Only recently has paper manufacturer at Overton been hived off. It has now thrown its resources into security features technology. The disruptors came from a digital culture, typified by a long-term presence in banking security. Ultimately, a passport is no different from proving who you are in any number of scenarios, and Gemalto is years ahead of De La Rue in that technology. It is also a much larger company with more experience in the relevant technologies. Painful as it may be, HM government could not in all conscience give the contract to De La Rue when the alternative is so clearly superior. Dark mutterings about possible hidden subsidies by the French government are wide of the mark. And that from James Anderson, Wright's Close, South Wanston.
Badger Cull. Sir, slaughtering thousands of innocent badgers is so unnecessary that I just had to write in to voice my horror at the thought of it and to make sure that the general public is aware of the real facts, Chronicle March the 15th. The truth is that although badgers can carry TB, less than 6% of the outbreaks are actually caused by badgers, and the human movement of cattle to and from infected areas is the main cause of the TB spreading. Professor Lord John Krebs was the government advisor responsible for the pilot culling trials between 1997 and 2007, and he himself has called badger culling ineffective and has said, "I cannot understand how anybody who's looked at the science would say that this cull is a good idea." The public, scientists and many farmers believe that there are much better ways of tackling the spread of TB. These include proper cattle management, measures which, as badger vaccination, strict biosecurity, regular TB testing, better hygiene and movement controls. Badger vaccination is not alone the answer but does have an immediate effect on the spread of TB with no known negative impact other than cost. Many areas of Great Britain already have highly effective badger vaccination programmes in force with the help and support of a range of organisations, including the local badger groups, National Farmers Union, individual farmers, the National Trust and several county councils, British Mountaineering Council and the police. The fault lies squarely with a few irresponsible farmers who do not exercise proper cattle management. Stricter penalties should be enforced on those farmers who cut corners in an effort to increase profits at the expense of spreading disease. Those very same farmers are the ones who are asking for the cull to deflect the blame from the way their lazy practices and onto innocent badgers. On top of that, sadly, there are some individuals who actually enjoy brutally killing for the sake of it and will look for any excuse to legitimise their bloodlust. Let us not be bullied by a handful of irresponsible and blame-dodging individuals picking on easy targets. Who will they pick on next? And that's from Mrs. Dominique Bengele of Edward Road, St. Cross, Winchester. And there is a picture of a badger.
Now a letter from Councillor Guy Ashton, St Michael's Ward, Colebrook Street, Winchester, about Silver Hill. Sir, your Death of Winchester headline, Chronicle March 22nd, was based on shop closures. Others point to the number of charity shops and to the presence of the street market and downmarket stores. I decided to look at the evidence. Today, I counted 327 shops in central Winchester. A mere 12 were empty. That's 3.7%, consistent with the citywide 4% vacancy rate, calculated in 2016. Some churn is inevitable, but 4% or 1 in 25, pretty healthy and way below the national average of around 1 in 8. I also counted 9 charity shops and the number seems stable. The nearest payday loan shop, an indicator of stress, is in Eastleigh. Some decry the street market and the presence of TK Maxx, Travelodge, Poundland and Primark. But they successfully offer options to the young and less affluent, as well as to those seeking something different or artisanal. As for blaming Winchester City Council for the supposed decline, its proposals for Silver Hill regeneration will only marginally increase retail space in the city by about 4%, well within estimates of unmet demand. Winchester City Council does not control the retail sector's costs. Central government sets business rates and private landlords set rents. Winchester City Council owns just 5 outlets on the High Street. Shopping habits are changing. Some towns, stores and chains are failing to adapt. But we should celebrate the dynamism of retailers in Winchester. The sector's enthusiasm for the city is evident. Just look at recent arrivals like the Ivy, Mint Velvet, Sass and Edge, Tesco, Pret, Picon, Faro and Ball, Mantique, Shaker Kitchens, TK Maxx, The Dispensary, Pavier Lee, Orchid, Mint Tea Boutique, Blue Bamboo, Overdraft, Hoxton Bakehouse and Turtle Bay, to name just a few. Headlines about the death of a vital sector that contributes so much to the city are unfounded, misleading and damaging.
And the last letter relates to Silver Hill, but is signed by a large number of signatories and is relating to the archaeology. Sir, the City Council's approach to the archaeology beneath the Silver Hill site displays a complete lack of imagination and ambition. The report just published admits that the Roman baths and other very significant remains could be found and be well preserved on this site. There is no good reason why, instead of just building over the remains, as the council proposes, they could not be properly excavated and exhibited in such a way as to advance the city's knowledge of its heritage and to promote its economy and its reputation. We also believe that the council's assumption that the remains can be left unharmed in situ is misguided. 2/3 of what was found under the Brooks Centre, which at the time Professor Biddle described as the most important medieval excavation in Europe, was destroyed. Careful analysis of the substructure needed to support the Henderson scheme shows that the same, or even worse, would have happened at Silver Hill. The potentially priceless archaeology on this site must take precedence over any development. The council must take full responsibility and excavate the whole site properly. Once it's revealed what lies where, a strategy for its future exhibition or inclusion within any development can be devised. A full excavation would also have to have the benefit of de-risking the site from a developer's perspective and ensure that the council achieves the optimum financial return from the site's future development, as well as enabling us to celebrate our history. The integration of historic assets within modern environments has been successfully achieved around the world, and there are nothing but poor excuses stopping Winchester doing the same. The current strategy for archaeology on Silver Hill needs a complete rethink, and we urge the council to do that now. And as I say, that's got a very large number of signatories, and I won't read all those for you at this stage. And now we move on to historical items, stepping back into the dusty realms dusty of time 200 years ago, Nikki.
Which was Monday, March the 30th, 1818. On Monday evening, about 11 o'clock, a daring attempt at highway robbery was made for about a mile from the city under the following circumstances. Mr. Robin, quite appropriate name, don't you think? Mr. Robin of the White Hart Inn had been to Romsey and on his return was accompanied by Mr. Wilkins, who had given his horse in charge of a man named Noel to bring home, who rode a little distance behind the chase. When near Pitt Farm, a footpad suddenly came up, seized the bridle of the horse with one hand, while with the other he turned a pistol at his head and demanded money. And the second item. The concert at Sir John's house on Thursday evening presented a most exquisite treat, both social and instrumental, and repeated plaudits of a delighted audience bore ample testimony to the brilliantly successful exertions of all the performers.
And 100 years ago, on Saturday, March the 30th, 1918, Rifleman Arthur Charles Fielder, Rifle Brigade, who is now at his home, 14 Chester Road, Winchester, has had the good fortune to have made good his escape from the German camp at Rennbahn. He was taken prisoner during the retreat from Mons on August 27, 1914, and was first interned at Munster and subsequently at Rennbahn, where he had been for 3 years. There are about 700 at the camp, and Rifleman Fielder states that since the arrangement made by the Red Cross Society and the Central Prisoners of War Fund, prisoners in the German camps get their food parcels more regularly. Rifleman Fielder, who was a reservist before the war, is the son of Mrs. Winkworth.
And 50 years ago, Saturday, March the 30th, 1968. Motorists in Winchester are to be confronted next week with new one-way signs and direction arrows on the roads. An experimental traffic plan for the bottom half of the city getting underway tomorrow, Sunday. Broadly, the plan will make Middlebrook Street and Friars Gate one way and prevent traffic turning right at the bottom of St George's Street. The plan will be operated for a month, and then Winchester City Council will decide on whether it will be retained permanently or not. The main purpose is to reduce the conflict between pedestrians and vehicles in the short section of Middlebrook Street between Marks and Spencer's and Sainsbury's. But a fresh problem could be created at the junction of Eastgate Street and Friars Gate because of the increased volume of traffic being channelled along Friars Gate. Councillor Stuart Green, Chairman of the City Council's Highways Committee, said at an explanatory conference on Tuesday that the plan could only be proved to be feasible or not by experiment, and that if it proved to be completely unworkable, even before the month was up, it would be withdrawn. Construction on the new Kingsworthy Link Road, which has to negotiate the main railway line to Waterloo and also the branch line to Oulton, means that Winchester will be virtually without trains tomorrow, Sunday. Road engineers are excavating the route of the new road, and to facilitate their work, the railway lines between Eastleigh and Basingstoke will be partially closed all day.
And 25 years ago, on Friday, March the 26th, 1993, a public display for a 60,000 square foot superstore at Bar End, Winchester, was unveiled by Tesco last week. The display on Thursday and Friday described the proposed store as a sensitive quality development and a much-needed additional shopping facility for the city. Plans for the store include a petrol station, parking for 630 cars and a bus stop. A new access would be built and 350 full and part-time jobs would be generated. Tesco has submitted an outline planning application to Winchester City Council for the store. However, shoppers will be given another choice when Waitrose makes its planning application for a store on the old cattle market site on Andover Road. Philip Pearce, director of Kimberley Securities PLC, acting on behalf of Waitrose, said the City Council consultants, Chesterton, had identified the need for one or more store in the town. He explained the Tesco store is outside the policy boundary and is bigger than that outlined by Chesterton's. The Waitrose store was not only in the right size, but on the right side of town, he said. And now we move on to our editorial comment, Nikki.
Right, and this is headed Change for the Better on Chessel Street. And as a matter of interest, the Hampshire Chronicle is in its 243rd year. It's not bad, is it? So, it will have taken 6 months longer than originally planned when it opens, but the wait for Chesil Lodge looks to have been worth it. Some people think this new development is ugly, but beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and others will say it is a handsome, modern building that adds more to the Chesil Street scene than a dull car park. The City Council is to be applauded for developing housing for the over 55s with a new type of accommodation that better allows for independent living. The flats are close to the city centre, meaning the people living there have the best chance of avoiding the dangers of social isolation and loneliness with the associated health risks. Certainly those residents who will live on the western side of the scheme, with the views over the River Itchen and across the city over the cathedral and peninsula barracks, are to be envied. Some critics have said that the scheme damages the local streetscape, but perhaps they don't know that until the coming of the Southampton-Newbury Railway in the late 19th century, that side of Chesil Street was built up with numerous houses, several thought to be medieval, albeit not as high as the new scheme. They were demolished in the name of progress, and before the car park was created, the land was used as allotments. Cities are always in a state of change, and this is one for the better.
Thank you. Now we have first person, Norma.
Dig Deep for Silver Hill by Joanna Lewis. Fantastic news. The archaeology report, finally commissioned by the City Council, was published last week. Amidst the jargon is the confirmation that underneath Silver Hill lies a rich, buried archaeological resource. Waterlogged remains up to 6 metres deep of human settlement since the Mesolithic age, the time Mick Jagger was born, contained an unbroken sequence of well-preserved archaeology, including Roman and Anglo-Saxon. We could unearth what every regional Roman capital had, public baths and an amphitheatre. Awesome. So naturally, one would expect the recommendation that we find the money, experts and volunteers to get on with it, especially since the report acknowledges that some of the remains are likely already damaged from modern construction. But no. Instead, the site, we're told, should be concreted over for future generations to explore. Well, quantum excrementiae and pickle your Julius Caesars. There are two serious and colossal holes in this feeble stance. Firstly, the remains likely face being damaged or destroyed, as has happened before across the city. The notion that developers always carefully excavate archaeology, or that buildings five-storey structures on waterlogged land won't lead to foundations being sunk into the remains, is naive at best and criminal at worst. Secondly, it makes no economic sense in the long term not to seek local and national funding to support heritage-driven development, i.e. excavate first, then build round it. This council would rather look to a large department store and a conventional retail model, flying in the face of all the warning signs about the fragility of high streets and the popularity of online shopping. As with the consultation process for Silver Hill as a whole, this archaeological report has been carefully choreographed from the start to get the verdict council leaders wanted, i.e., it's too costly to excavate, so cover it with concrete and put what you like over it. Typical. The report wasn't published in time for the actual public meeting on Monday, March the 19th, but the day after. Not one of the independent experts was there to defend it. Everyone in the audience that night could see what was coming when the verbal summary of the report began with the definition of the term archaeology. Gee, thanks. The public won't back down on this. The response of so many people already has been utter dismay and total disillusion. The general direction of the plans for Silver Hill is now all too apparent, lacking in creativity, details sparse, and a PR exercise. Worse still, the archaeology report was a total cop-out. As one long-standing resident commented, I don't follow the logic of building over the city's archaeological remains again. If earlier generations had done that, we'd now know nothing of our past. How long are we supposed to turn our backs on such a potentially rich resource? Well said. Now is the best time to excavate and invest in displaying our World Heritage Site. Others do it, so why can't we? If construction takes place in these dire circumstances, what will future generations be left with anyway? A Roman cake stand and a pair of Anglo-Saxon flip-flops? Once again, only sustained public pressure will get council leaders to wake up from their zombie-like trance and accept that Winchester can only be itself and not try to mimic bigger cities through more shops and restaurants. Is this their vision? A new West Quay? Basingstoke with a cathedral? Bonkers. A long-term regeneration programme for the city and its people has to harness existing assets. In other words, it is high time to recognise sustainable wealth creation lies in archaeology, heritage and culture and education. How hard can it be to grasp that Winchester can re-emerge as a historic capital only through these riches? It's beyond parody that just as the public gets through to the council and the concept of Winchesterness emerges at a cost of £XXX thousand consultancy fee, so the council becomes hell-bent on extinguishing it. Time to dig deep, everyone.
And now we move on to some articles from Belgarum.
Yes, Belgarum's alternative look at the news. There are three items. First one, how to stop drivers knocking over bollards. Another bollard inconveniently getting in the way of traffic. This time in St George's Street next to Superdrug. The roadway is relatively narrow and space is at a premium, especially as it is also a busy bus route. It tests the skill of the driver, and many fail the examination. Perhaps the only way to stop delivery vehicles, and they are invariably the culprit, being so cavalier, is to make the bollards much longer, stronger, and bury more of the object in the ground. That way, they would be an immovable object, and it would be the privately owned offending vehicles that suffer the damage, and not the city council-owned bollard and highway that has to be restored at public expense. And there's a photograph of a bashed bollard resembling a certain tower in Pisa. And two people walking by. And the second item, 50 years since the one-way system. The age-old question of what to do about Winchester's one-way system has seen several outings in the Hampshire Chronicle in recent months. Speaking to residents in the city centre, people often say that they would like to see the route removed. It regularly infuriates motorists, with Javed Akhtar of Gavade's Dry Cleaners on Upper Brook Street, Q&A, March the 15th, saying, "Once you're on the one-way system, people turn into animals." Based on Upper Brook Street ourselves, Belgarum can confirm that is the case. But reading back through past editions of the Chronicle, the original reason for introducing the first experimental change in 1968 now appears to be obsolete, leading us to raise the question once again of whether the system is right for the city. High-tech computers can now easily control traffic flows if two-way was reintroduced. As you will see in our From the Files feature on page 37, 50 years ago, drivers were met with new one-way signs and direction arrows on the roads for the start of a new one-month trial. However, the reason given for the trial was reducing the conflict between pedestrians and vehicles in the short section of Middle Brook Street between Marks and Spencer's and Sainsbury's. As readers will be aware, that stretch of Middle Brook Street, where it joins High Street, is pedestrianised, along with the stretch past the Brook Shopping Centre up to Friarsgate. So is there another reason which makes the one-way system relevant today? The chorus of honking horns we hear almost hourly suggests otherwise. If you have an answer or remember how the experiment went in 1968, write to letters at hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's letters at hampshirechronicle.co.uk. And the third and final item, action against club defunct since 2015. The last ripples following the closure of a long-running social club have just reached the shore. The East Winchester Social Club on Chesil Street closed in May 2015. Now the Financial Conduct Authority has issued a public notice to cancel its public registration for willfully violating the Friendly Societies Act 1974 by not submitting any annual returns since the one for the financial year ending December the 31st, 2012. It is probably worth pointing out the club has been closed for nearly 3 years.
Thank you. Now we have the announcements. We start with What's On, and there are a couple of concerts. Just a reminder that every Tuesday at lunchtime there's a recital in Romsey Abbey, musical recital. And that's every week on a Tuesday lunchtime between 1:10 and 1:50, and it's free with a retiring collection. On Friday, April the 6th at 7:30 p.m. at Holy Trinity Church in Upper Brook Street, the Gesualdo Six are performing unaccompanied choral music from Renaissance right through to the present day. And that's just £12 ticket on the door. On the stage at the Mayflower, Southampton, Titanic the Musical is on from Thursday, April the 12th to Saturday, April the 21st. Various times. For more information on Titanic the Musical at the Mayflower, telephone 02380 711 811. And just a quick preview of something that's coming up at the Holiday Inn Winchester. They're hosting a Fawlty Towers comedy dinner show on Friday the 27th of April. And there will be actors playing Basil, Sybil and Manuel in a part scripted, part improvised show which includes dinner, and they will greet and meet you. And I have done one of these. It's a really, really interesting evening. So you can try that. It's at the Holiday in Winchester on Friday the 27th of April. Tickets are £32, including the meal. Now, lighting up time ends Thursday the 29th of March at 6:48 a.m. and begins at 7:33 p.m. On Wednesday the 4th of April, it ends at 6:35 a.m. and begins at 7:43 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. All right, now we move on to items of general news. Please, Nikki.
And this one is headed Ferrari Crash Driver Jailed. The owner of a car storage business has been jailed for 18 months for causing the death of a 13-year-old Kingsworthy boy after he lost control while showing off in a 1.2 million Ferrari. Matthew Cobden was found guilty at Winchester Crown Court of causing the death by careless driving of Alexander Worth. He was also banned from driving for 2 years and ordered to take an extended retest. The trial heard that the 39-year-old gave the youngster a ride in the Ferrari F50 at North Warnborough near Basingstoke, but the car accelerated uncontrollably and launched into the air, throwing the pair out of the vehicle as they were not wearing seatbelts. Sentencing, Judge Keith Cutler, recorder of Winchester, said, "You decided to put your foot down. The Ferrari was unnecessarily in second gear, could have been in first gear, You put your foot down in order to cause a thrill for Alexander. You were showing off. That is the explanation for the accident and its consequences. In accelerating such a powerful vehicle, you lost control of it. Your evidence was that whilst you were experienced in driving such cars, the surge of power took you by surprise. He added, nothing that this court can do can bring Alexander back to his mother and father and his family. Nothing that I can do can properly reflect or compensate that loss of his life. Sergeant Rick Grant from the Serious Collision Investigation Unit added, this is truly a tragic case where a young boy has lost his life. His family have been left devastated by this, but they have shown great courage throughout this heartbreaking investigation. This sentence could never make up for losing Alexander, but I hope that it will bring some form of closure to his family. When driving such a powerful car, Cobden should have been in total control of the vehicle and taken all precautions to ensure he and his young passenger were safe. If anything can be taken away from this collision, I hope that by seeing how important it is to wear a seatbelt, regardless of the length or location of your journey, it might prevent another family going through this nightmare. Cobden of Walton-on-Thames, Surrey, had argued a mechanical fault with the car caused the crash, and there is a photograph of Matthew Cobden looking absolutely devastated, as one would imagine.
Signs of spring starting to arrive after the long winter. Spring, in all its exciting, bustling glory, is just round the corner, and we at the Wildlife Trust are delighted to see the calling cards of a brand new season. Here are a few signs of spring that you may have noticed in your local area. Daffodils blooming. A golden host of daffodils is enough to brighten up the gloomiest of spring days. In early spring, head to the few remaining woods and meadows where daffodils grow in wild profusion, much more delicate and understated than their brash cultivated cousins. These wildflowers are forgotten champions of a woodland in spring. They're also known as the Lent lily, since they often bloom over the Lent period. Hares boxing. Early spring is the best time to see the fastest land mammal in the country, the brown hare, reaching speeds of 40 miles an hour at full pelt. The brown hare is one of our great athletes, easily able to outpace Usain Bolt. The brown hare's great speed can make it a tricky character to get a good look at. Luckily, Mad March hares choose a different sport in the spring. They take up boxing instead of sprinting. The pugilists are actually the females, spurning the advances of the amorous males by boxing their prospective partners. With their activity much more noticeable before the grass and crops have grown up to their full height, it is not surprising that the Mad March hare has come to have such a strong connection with the spring. Woodpeckers drumming. In the bare branches of our woodlands, the woodpeckers are drumming, beating out a rhythm of the season. Both male and female woodpeckers drum, although the male definitely puts more into it, advertising for a mate and proclaiming his territory by hammering away at his favourite branch in bursts of up to 20 times a second, with a force four times as strong as that of a football being kicked by Wayne Rooney. The bones of the woodpecker's skull have evolved a durable combination of spongy shock absorbers and a specially adapted tongue bone that acts as a seat belt, holding the brain tightly in place. Frog spawn being laid. We've already seen plenty of frog spawn laid in ponds, ditches and slow-moving streams. Female frogs lay thousands of eggs each year, but its numbers game as only a select few survive to adulthood. Look out for clumps of jelly with black spots. If there are long chains like strings of pearls draped over underwater pond plants, you have a toad on your hands.
Banished from the Russian meeting. Members of the public were barred from a lecture at Winchester College on the Russian presidential election. Martin Holmes and Andrea Owen had wanted to attend the meeting of the Winchester Russian Circle. being addressed by historian and politician Vladimir Ryshtsakov. The lecture had been advertised in the Chronicle and the Circle website as open to the public. But Mr. Holmes of Culverwell Gardens said that on arrival at the Science Lecture Theatre, we were confronted by two Winchester College security guards and a man from the Winchester Russian Circle. When we said that we had come because of the notice in the Hampshire Chronicle and the information on the Circle's website, we were told the talk should not have been advertised in the Chronicle, and second, because it should not have been advertised, we couldn't enter. So much for any idea that the college might engage in a little inclusiveness with their neighbours. At no point did anyone say that they were sorry that they had misled members of the public into believing that they would be welcome. This leaves a nasty taste in the mouth. A college spokesman said, unfortunately, the school event had been advertised in error. It became oversubscribed internally, and a small number of those arriving on the door who were not members of the Winchester Russian Circle could not be admitted. We apologise for the inconvenience caused.
Top inspection grades for Bluebird. Bluebird Care in Winchester has received 5 outstandings in all areas of their inspection by the Care Industry Regulator, the Care Quality Commission, CQC. The company, who offer home and live-in care to people across Winchester, East Lee and Romsey, have been awarded the country's highest ever outstanding quality ratings. Run by husband and wife team Norman and Claire Murphy from Alsford, the company aspires to delivering quality home care which is good enough for mum or dad. Mr. Murphy, owner and managing director of Bluebird Care, said, "When we set out 6 years ago, we had a clear vision to be the best, and today that dream came true." The couple said that they had set out to turn the care industry on its head with a fresh approach. Bluebird Care now has the accolade of being the first to have all offices of a single care company being graded at the highest level possible. Andrea Sutcliffe, CQC Chief Inspector of Adult Social Care, said, "The quality of care which our inspectors found while inspecting services at Bluebird Care Winchester, Eastleigh and Romsey was exceptional, and I am very pleased that we can celebrate their achievements. The report highlights so many elements of really good practice, fantastic leadership, the use of technology to enrich the quality of care, a real focus on nurturing staff skills and development, and such an obvious and dedicated focus on the people using the service. Bluebird Care offices collectively care for over 400 customers and employ more than 175 members of staff. There are over 10,000 care companies across the whole of England." And there's a photograph of them receiving their award with 5 gold stars held up on a banner and a lot of charming, smiling people in their Bluebird uniforms.
Eco Easter, lessening your impact. Last week, I walked into a supermarket in Southampton to look at Easter eggs for my 4 boys. As I walked down the aisle stacked with chocolatey options, I decided to do an informal audit of the eggs. Roughly 70% were packed in plastic with an additional cardboard layer around the outside. About 30% had plastic around the main egg and more plastic around the box. About 90% were not fair traded eggs, and of the 90%, over 80% had palm oil in that could not be tracked to a sustainable source. No surprise then that I decided not to buy any. So why does it matter? Firstly, much of the plastic used for the egg packaging is either impossible or complex to recycle. Much of it will disappear into landfill, where over the years it will slowly disintegrate into smaller pieces, some of it which will find its way into streams, rivers and out to sea. Secondly, the small bits of plastic then risk getting into the food chain, damaging fish stocks, seabirds and even our own health. Thirdly, if we eat non-fairly traded chocolate, You risk eating an egg where the cocoa beans have been harvested by kids as young as 8 years old, where there is no minimum wage, and where the cocoa plantation may have originated on an area of rainforest. And fourthly, there is a big problem with palm oil in chocolate. If it is not sustainably sourced, then there is a good chance that an orangutan have died to make way for your Easter treat. Swathes of Asian tropical forests have been cut down for the oil palm plantations so loved by sweet makers. So what can we do? Ban Easter eggs? No, I love Easter, as do our boys. And if I come home with no chocolate, there will be trouble. So here are my top three Easter tips. 1. Buy a real Easter egg. That is one that has been fair traded and ethically sourced. 2. Write to the makers of your favourite eggs and tell them why you're not buying from them this year. The best way to persuade a manufacturer to change direction is to vote with your feet. And 3. If you don't like chocolate, consider using your money to buy a native shrub of tree or tree for your garden.
Man banned from the city. A shoplifter with no means has been fined £135 and banned from Winchester for 12 months. But as William Telford cannot pay, magistrates have released him because of the time he has spent in custody after his arrest. Telford, 56, of no fixed abode, admitted several thefts of food and alcohol from shops in Winchester, including Tesco, Greggs and Iceland. He also pleaded guilty to urinating in public when prohibited by a criminal behaviour order made in March 2017. Magistrates have banned him from entering Winchester until March 2019.
Mixed response to Boomtown proposals. A bid by the landowner of the site used by Winchester Festival Boomtown to change planning permission has received mixed feedback. Advoco Planning Limited, on behalf of Matterley Estate landowner Peveril Bruce, is seeking permission to change conditions relating to duration and maximum attendees at festivals, as well as noise levels and entertainment times. It follows a decision by Winchester City Council's Licensing Subcommittee to approve revised Boomtown plans. As previously reported, councillors backed plans in February for the popular festival to have an additional provision for 5,000 additional staff, artists and their guests, as well as an additional 1,000 tickets for local residents. The council also approved plans which will see 16,000 attendees arrive on Wednesday, in a move which Boomtown say will help ease traffic congestion. However, the council has curtailed plans which would have seen noise levels at the festival rise from 65 decibels to 70 decibels during performances from the headline acts and increase to 68 decibels at all other times. The council instead imposed restrictions which will see the noise levels not exceed 65 decibels on Thursday and Sunday and only be allowed to raise levels to 68 decibels from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday. Festival organisers had announced plans to increase the festival attendance to 80,000 by 2019, but were shelved. Now, to tie in with the City Council licence, permission is being sought from the South Downs National Park Authority. The bid has received mixed feedback, with a large number expressing support. Philip Denis said, "The Matterley activities provides a huge economic injection into the local community. It provides great entertainment to many in a beautiful environment." Sarah West of Longfield Road, Winnell, added, "I live very near this festival and it causes us no trouble. We just avoid driving in that direction on that weekend. It's great to see lots of young people around having fun." However, Michael Beer of Hockley Cottages, Cheriton, said, "This cancerous encroachment of Boomtown must be rejected, or at the very least not be allowed to continually expand year on year, with all the associated road gridlocks, noise nuisance, deaths, drugs, thefts, burned out cars and vandalism." Cheriton Parish Council strongly objected to the bid, with the Ossobry and Tichborne Parish Councils also raising concerns, while parish councils for Itchinstoke and Ovington and Bramdean and Hinton Ampner, along with Highways England and Hampshire Constabulary, raised no objections. A decision is expected in mid-May. And we do have a photograph, which having been there, I can tell you it is absolutely amazing. And it's the main stage, which looks as big as Buckingham Palace, with massive firework displays coming off the top of it of all different colours, and the whole front of the stage lit up, lights, and more people than you can imagine packed in front of it. It is a massive event.
Happy birthday to Britain's oldest man, aged 110 today. Britain's oldest man celebrates his 110th birthday today, but will not be accepting any more birthday cards from the Queen because there's no point. Robert Wayton was born in Hull on March the 29th, 1908, and has lived through both world wars. The centenarian has three children, 10 grandchildren and 25 great-grandchildren. He now lives in a flat in Alton and has started turning down cards from the Queen after receiving too many. He said, "I'm not having any more from the Queen. There's no point having one every year. I've been sent quite a lot since I turned 100, but it's just another day for me. I celebrate all days the same now." He lives alone and is still mobile and attends coffee mornings and clubs. He said, "I walk to Waitrose a couple of times a week for my shop. I only need to pay £5 per day for my food. I do a lot of speaking at clubs and schools to talk about my life and what it was like during the war." And there is a lovely picture of Mr. Wyton smiling and looking much younger than his 110 years. And he has a cake in front of him with one blue one, one yellow one, and a red circle. So he's 110, each with a candle on the top. Good for him.
Yes, over here.
Beacon event. Tickets have been released for a major religious event taking place later this spring. The Right Reverend Tim Dakin, Bishop of Winchester, announced 1,000 tickets for a special beacon event at Winchester Cathedral on Sunday, May the 20th. This event will be the culmination of a wave of prayer which will be taking place across the country from May the 10th to the 20th as part of the Thy Kingdom Come scheme. It marks an opportunity for Christians to join in prayer for the 9 days between the Christian feasts of Ascension and Pentecost. Christians of all denominations across the Diocese of Winchester will be taking part in this celebration of faith and prayer, which is taking place for the third time this year. The Beacon event at Winchester Cathedral, one of 37 taking place in cathedrals, will once again bring together thousands of Christians.
Unique Marwell Habitat opens. Marwell has opened its new Tropical House exhibit, home to 9 species of tropical birds, 2,500 fish, pygmy marmosets, tortoises and a sloth named Rika. The new 7.8 million exhibit, the first of its kind, is more habitat than traditional zoo exhibit and sees all the animals living together. It has been constructed to create an artificial rainforest of sorts, with different animals interacting with each other like they would in the wild. Birdkeeper Liz Askew said, "It's been very exciting to see all the birds settle in and to see them act and interact with the environment like they would in the wild." And there's some lovely photographs, one of the pygmy marmoset, who has the most beautiful stippled coat. Doesn't really look like a monkey at all, but I suppose it isn't, it's a marmoset. And a little deer, which I think is a mouse deer, sort of foraging around in the leaf litter on the ground, and a tank full of very stripy fish, which I think are the little tiger fish. And Rika the sloth, well, you have never seen a more beautiful expression. She looks like she's lying on the beach in Saint-Tropez. And a particularly inspiring picture of a load of dials, which I suppose are the control system for the for this wonderful thing that they've constructed. I just hope they haven't put any animals in there that are actually going to eat the other animals. They're all going to live together.
Trade waste initiative is paying off. Winchester's fight to clean up the city streets is already getting some positive results, according to the civic chiefs. Following concerns from residents, visitors and business community that the trade waste was spoiling the appearance of the city centre, the City Council has been working to remove them. Now, through work with Winchester Bid, Hampshire County Council, business and waste collections companies, problem area Hammond's Passage has been cleared and deep cleaned. Councillor Ian Tate, a long-term campaigner for the removal of the bins from Hammond's Passage, said, "We are so lucky to be living in such a wonderful and historic city, and ensuring that we have a close eye on detail is really important. I want to congratulate officers for all their hard work in clearing Hammond's Passage of a large collection of unsightly refuse bins, and I'm looking forward to seeing further improvements across the city centre. As well as cleaning Hammond's Passage, the City Council has also made the previously unused space in Middlebrook Street car park available for businesses to store bins." Councillor Jan Warwick, portfolio holder for the environment, said, "We are really pleased that the first results of our trade waste initiative have been so positive. The city centre businesses have really engaged with us over this issue, and all of them have been open to finding alternative accommodation for their bins. As the weeks pass, visitors to the city centre will see a vast improvement to the environment and the street scene. This project is ongoing and our officers are monitoring the situation."
Driver 71 fined. A pensioner who knocked unconscious a Highways England traffic officer with his vehicle has been fined at Portsmouth Crown Court. Michael Woods, 71, of Waterlooville, was found guilty of driving without due care and attention and assault occasioning actual bodily harm. He was fined £500 with 9 points on his licence for careless driving. For the actual bodily harm, a community order with 2 years supervision and 20 rehabilitation days was imposed. The court last Friday heard how Woods was driving a Nissan Navara on the A33M on November the 8th, 2016, when he pulled over to use his mobile phone on the hard shoulder near the Eastern Bridge. He was approached by traffic officers, and without warning, Woods left the scene at speed, striking traffic officer Stuart Mackay, knocking him unconscious. Woods did not stop and was chased by a member of the public who had witnessed the incident to inform him that he had hit someone. The errant driver was abusive, said he hadn't, and drove off. Mr. Mackay was taken to Queen Alexandra Hospital in Portsmouth, suffering concussion, severe soft tissue damage, cuts and bruises. After the hearing, Mr. Mackay said, "We are taught about the dangers of working on motorways and are prepared to deal with a wide range of incidents. I am an extremely lucky person, and thankfully my injuries weren't too severe. Working on road is a potentially dangerous job, and I ask drivers to respect my colleagues that are here to help drivers when they need us." Des Leach, Highways England Regional Operations Manager, said, "Traffic officers play a vital role in clearing motorway incidents and keeping traffic flowing. Safety runs through everything we do, and abuse or violence towards our staff is completely unacceptable. We welcome today's verdict and hope it serves as a reminder to treat on-road staff who put themselves in harm's way every day with respect." PC Colin Green of Hampshire Police added, "Mr. Woods has always denied colliding with the traffic officer, despite this incident being caught on dash cam."
News in brief. RAF is 100. April 1st marks 100 years since the founding of the RAF. For one Winchester family, it would seem that flying is in their blood, with two generations all joining the oldest independent air force. Ray Hillier, a former RAF engineer, compiled a book on the history of his family, including his uncle and cousin, both called Freddie. Fred Hillier joined up with his brothers in December 1915 as an aircraft fitter in the Royal Flying Corps. He transferred to the newly formed Royal Air Force in 1918, at which time he had reached the rank of corporal. By the end of the Second World War, he would reach the rank of sergeant before retiring to Alsford to become a fitter at Hankins Garage on West Street. His son, Fred Hillier Jr., was a Wellington bomber pilot during the Second World War, taking part in the first 1,000 bomber raid on Cologne in 1942. After completing his run over the city with only one engine left, while over Holland, the craft was attacked by German Fw-190 fighters. The crew were killed, and while attempting to bail out, his parachute became tangled and failed to open properly, and he was knocked out as he hit the ground. On his return to Britain after the war, Freddie Jr. kept a picture of his crew in his breast pocket for the remainder of his life. Ray Hillier of Leinston Close, Week, said of being part of the RAF, "It has stayed with me all my life. It's like belonging to a big club."
Esso plans to lay new pipeline across county. A UK oil giant has launched a public consultation into replacing a Hampshire pipeline. Excuse me. Esso proposes relaying 90 kilometres of its 105 kilometre aviation fuel pipeline, which links Fawley Refinery to its West London storage facility in Hounslow. The current pipeline was laid in 1969 and 1973 to supply oil to large industrial sites and oil-fired power stations. Having been in operation for over 40 years, Esso now wishes to replace it to retain reliable flow of aviation fuel to airports. Recently, a 10-kilometre section was replaced between Hamble and Borley Green and are now proposing to replace the rest between Borley Green and Hounslow. It runs across the Meon Valley and past Alsford via Bramdean. With the introduction of the South Downs National Park, another protected site being introduced along the existing pipeline, Esso will be moving the pipeline to one of potential corridors, three in the south from Esso's Fawley Refinery to its Alton pumping station, and three to the north of this juncture. As a result of this, Esso are holding an open consultation which runs until April the 30th for people to have their say. As well as a consultation, Esso will be hosting a number of public exhibitions of the proposals, including one at the Jubilee Hall in Bishop's Waltham on April the 20th. Tim Sutherland, Pipeline Project Executive, said, "We recognise the importance of individuals, communities, representatives and organisations contributing to the development of our proposals. The existing pipeline was built in the late 60s. Since then, Hampshire and Surrey have changed dramatically. The South Downs National Park and many other protected sites have been established alongside the existing pipeline. We need to identify a corridor that will minimise interruption to local communities and have better environmental outcomes versus the other options considered." And there is a map of where this pipeline goes. It goes fairly straight from Esso Refinery through via Bishop's Waltham, Alton, in between Fleet and Farnborough. It's a fairly straight line.
From war zone to Palm Sunday parade. Three Syrian children are building a new life in Hampshire after escaping the horror of their war-torn homeland. Members of the Haidar family saw their lives turned upside down in 2015 when the Syrian village of Sadad was attacked by ISIS. Mark Hyder, 11, and his two sisters, Merai, 13, and 5-year-old Merella, became separated from their parents, Antun and Nazreen Haidar, who were subsequently captured by ISIS, but their children returned to the village and spent a year being looked after by members of the local community. Last year they came to England with the help of Safe Passage to the UK and are living with relatives in the Winchester area. But the children are desperate to be reunited with their parents, initially feared dead. Mum and Dad have returned to Sadad following an advance by the Syrian army. So far, more than 8,000 refugees have arrived in this country under the government's Syrian resettlement scheme. 3 years ago, ministers announced that 20,000 Syrians driven from the war-torn country would be taken in by the UK by 2020. The scheme was drawn up following a public outcry over the fate of those attempting the dangerous voyage across the Mediterranean. Now the Haidar children are adjusting to life in England and taking an ever greater role in the local community. Members of the Orthodox Christian Church, the children took part in a Palm Sunday parade from the Great Hall in Winchester to the city's cathedral. Their uncle, George Haidar of Compton, said, "Their parents are back in the village and the children are over here with us. We thought their parents had died. We didn't have any news about them for 1.5 years. We are supporting the children a lot and trying to make life as normal for them as we can. Understandably, they want to be with the parents, but here rather than in Syria." George's wife, Elizabeth, added, "They are incredibly strong and very determined. They have received great support from people at the cathedral who have been amazing. Everyone has been determined to do their bit," said Mrs. Haidar. And there's a photograph of the three children, Mark, Merella and Merai, at the Great Hall before the start of the Palm Sunday procession to the cathedral, wearing their white robes with red collars and holding processional candlesticks. Lovely photograph, lovely story, very moving.
The Ivy opening plans. A new restaurant set to open its doors in Winchester High Street later this year is asking planners for permission to extend its opening times. Pegasus Group, on behalf of the Ivy, has submitted a planning application with the City Council to open half an hour later than it was granted in its licence. The restaurant, which will open at 103 to 104 High Street in the vacant former L.K. Bennett unit, had been granted planning permission to open between 8 a.m. and midnight, Monday to Thursday, to 1 a.m. on Friday and Saturday and 11 p.m. on Sunday. However, the restaurant's owner is seeking permission to add half an hour to each day, except for Sunday, where they plan to open an hour and a half later, till 12:30 a.m. Katie Priest of Pegasus Group said in a planning statement, "Email correspondence with Robert Green from Winchester City Council on this issue indicates that the council would be amenable to this alteration." The applicant is also seeking to change the permissions for the plant layout on the restaurant's roof. A decision is expected in early May.
And thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. And thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks, of course, to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye.
And Albie Minns.
Bye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye. And we will wish you a very enjoyable Easter weekend, and hopefully you'll get the recording before Easter. Goodbye, have an enjoyable week, and when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible with the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.